This is The Doctor Is In, your bi-weekly podcast that discusses all things technical and not so technical. The Doctor Is In podcast is produced by ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, and sponsored by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. And now, here's your host, QST editor Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and the doctor himself, Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Hello, I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY.
I'm Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
I want to talk about planes.
Oh.
Well, no, this is a ham
radio
show. Trains, automobiles, no. Specifically ground planes.
Okay.
That's something going all the way back to my earliest days in amateur radio. I remember when I was getting on 2 meters for the first time, and this fellow said, well, you need a ground plane antenna. I thought, okay. And it was a quarter wave vertical with four little radials sticking out. And he pointed and he said, well, that's the ground plane. And it didn't make sense to me at the time, but I mean, technically, for the benefit of our listeners, you know, I have since learned my lesson, but for the benefit of everyone listening, what is a ground plane?
All right, let's go back a few steps because the antenna you're describing, the key part of it is the quarter wave vertical monopole part.
Yes.
Of it. And that kind of antenna goes back to the very earliest days of radio. In fact, back in those days when people were using the very low frequencies, what they used was a top-loaded vertical monopole because they couldn't make a quarter-wave antenna 800 feet high real easy in their backyard, although some people can with kites and balloons and things.
Oh, yeah.
But occasionally bring down aircraft, and you have to be careful about that. But they typically top-loaded them, and they fed them against ground in the earth ground, and some people used rods, but mostly people with radials in the ground. In fact, if you look at any broadcast station, AM broadcast station, there may be exceptions, but I've never seen one. Typically what they have is a quarter wave, sometimes a little higher, sometimes a little shorter antenna, typically as it's built as a tower, and then they have radials below it going out, called radials because they leave in a radial direction from the antenna every so many degrees around, making a circle if you want a uniform pattern. And typically, the broadcast station will have something like 128 of these radials, each possibly a half wavelength long and preferably in a swamp.
So oh, yeah.
So you'll notice in New Jersey, you go down the, I guess this is the Garden State or the New York Turnpike, maybe both, in some of the swampy areas in central and northern New Jersey, you see broadcast station after broadcast station, and that's because the ground conditions are just right.
In one of my books, I have a photograph, an aerial photograph, and I can't remember the broadcast station's call sign right at the moment, but you're right. It's in a tidal marsh, and from the air, and it was at relatively low tide, you could actually see the radials at the base of the antenna going out. It was quite a sight. There were quite a few of them.
Yeah, and that's that works very well, and I think there are FCC rules about what a broadcast station has to do for that, but for those of us that don't have those rules, we probably will not put out quite as many or quite as long radials in the ground. And what happens is the longer they are and the more contact they have with the earth and the better the conductivity of the earth, which is why the swamp is helpful, the less ground loss you have and the better the antenna works. So a lot of people use antennas like that on 160, 80, and 40 meters where it's hard to get a horizontal antenna that's high enough to give you low angle radiation.
Mm-hmm.
And you're stuck with a vertical antenna, which gives you relatively low angle radiation, depending on the ground conditions, not right at the base, but further away. So if you're right by the ocean, works very well. If you're where we live, it doesn't work as well, but it still will work better than a low horizontal antenna for long-distance communication in most cases. So that goes back before VHF was even gleaming anyone's eye, but it's continued. The antenna works very well on all bands. The problem is, at higher frequencies, you typically want to have the antenna launch a signal above the terrain and the nearby features, and particularly in VHF where you want to have a line of sight communication, you have to get it higher, or the higher you get it, the further the line of sight path to the horizon and so forth.
Yes.
So that means if you're going to do that kind of an antenna, you can't have it on the ground, you've got to elevate it, and one way to do that is to make an artificial ground that acts much like the ground under the vertical monopole that the broadcast stations use. And in fact, it turns out that if you have a ground plane with four quarter-wave radials simulating the ground, it actually works better than a whole bunch of buried radials once you move it off the ground. So you're not really giving up anything by not having 100 radials.
Yes.
Both beneath your ground plane. In fact, you don't even have to elevate it very far to take advantage of that. This has been determined by a number of people, and particularly by Rudy Severin's N6LF, wrote a very good QSD article summarizing a QEX series of some measurements he took. And basically what he found is that, say, four elevated radials on a 40-meter vertical, for example, and they could only be, it could be elevated 2 or 3 feet, doesn't matter, will do better than 30 buried radials. Now, of course, there's a little variability there depending on the ground conductivity and so forth. But anyway, in any event, you're not giving up anything by having a small number of radials that are attached as a, in the form of a ground plane. At my house, I have an 80-meter ground plane that has only two radials elevated. They're not very high. They're elevated about antler height. And the reason I have two is the antenna's at the edge of my woods, and the radials go off in the woods. And they happen to be sort of bracketing Europe. So it was kind of handy that if you have fewer radials and they're kind of concentrated in a direction, it just tends to focus the radiation in that direction, not dramatically. So I have about a 2 dB front-to-back ratio between the direction of the radials and the direction that doesn't have the radials, according to EasyNeck. That's, you know, it works well, and it helped me get my 80-meter part of my 5-band DXCC, for example, which I was struggling with my horizontal dipole mm-hmm. that wasn't really high enough. So it can work well.
If you're talking about elevated radials or radials buried in the ground or buried in a tidal marsh, in 25 words or less, Joel, what is the function of a ground plane?
Ah, that's a good point, yes.
Yeah.
Well, let's think about a quarter-wave antenna. A quarter-wave antenna is about half of a half-wave dipole, and you sort of need the other half. It's kind of like one hand clapping. So if you had an elevated quarter wave dipole and fed it with coax, it would work just fine, but it would have to be, the whole support structure would have to be at least a half wave high. If you imagine just bending the bottom quarter wave up to be horizontal, you have essentially a one radial ground plane, which will actually work.
Yes.
It'll be directional in the direction of that radial somewhat, but it'll work even better and be omnidirectional if you have multiple radials. It doesn't have to be mm-hmm. four. There's nothing magic about four. It'll work almost as well with two if they're on the opposite sides. Three spaced evenly will work almost the same as four. I'm not sure how we settled on four. I mean, five will probably work well too. In fact, some people use fill in the space by having actually a disc. So for particularly very high frequencies, mm-hmm. sometimes it's easier just to have a circular disc that's a quarter wave in radius as a ground plane, have the antenna connected in the middle of it, and feed it at that point. Gives you a little better isolation of the coax, since the fields can terminate right on that circle and they don't have anything spilling over around the radial.
Would it be fair to say that the ground plane is the other half of the antenna?
Absolutely. The fields in a half-wave dipole, the electric field is between the two halves of the dipole. In a quarter-wave monopole fed against ground, the fields extend from the monopole to the ground, and the important thing is to not have a lot of loss there. So the small number of radials under the ground tend to have a fair amount of loss. A lot of radials in a soggy ground have much less loss, and solid metal radials elevated above the ground have very little loss. But one question about that, a couple of questions. First of all, if you think about the buried radials or on-ground radials, which are work about the same way. What you're doing there is you're actually coupling to the ground. You're actually connecting to the earth. So the actual length is not critical. And some people think you have to have four. Well, no, actually, you're much better off with a smaller number of short radials than a small number of longer radials if they're on the ground. If they're elevated, they have to be a quarter wavelength to make the thing resonant, just like a resonant half-wave antenna.
Yes.
But if they're on the ground or buried, they don't have to be resonant. It's just, you're just connecting to the earth, so the length is not terribly critical. Where was I going with that? So the two different things. So if you have elevated radials, you can't consider them ground. They're actually part of the antenna. They have to be insulated. And the other caution is, you're probably aware that at the open end of an antenna, the far end, you have high RF voltages when
yes.
you transmit. Well, that same amount of voltage is on the end of the radials if they're elevated. So you have to be careful. You can't touch them or have them someplace where somebody or some animal can get in contact with them while you're transmitting. So you have to protect them. You don't have to worry about it with a buried system or a ground-based system. But an elevated radial system, you have to take care about.
I noticed earlier that you used the expression working against ground. Can you define that?
Yeah, what I mean by that is, your antenna transmission line has two conductors, typically a coax as an inner conductor and a shield, and you have to connect them to something. You don't have to, but it works better if you connect them to something. So what you typically do is you have the vertical rod of a monopole connected to the center conductor, and the ground side gets connected to the radial system or to ground or something. So you're applying the signal between the monopole and some kind of ground, either real or simulated ground with the radial. So that's why I call it operating against ground. You're feeding the signal with a return through the ground system.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
That's perhaps a better way to describe it.
Yeah, no, it's a term you hear used often, working against, or not a term, a phrase, working against ground. And I thought it was helpful to define that.
Good.
For
I'm glad you
our listeners.
That. Yeah, I tend to use things that I say and not realizing that not everybody knows what I mean.
Well, as usual, I have a question coming up, but let's hear from DX Engineering.
All right.
We will be back.
Our fellow hams have told us how much they love receiving the DX Engineering catalog. It's 132 pages of amateur radio heaven, packed with competitively priced equipment. You'll find everything from multiband Yagis to whip antennas, the latest bass transceivers to mobile radios, and every accessory under the sun. But the catalog only represents a small part of what DX Engineering offers. When you visit dxengineering.com, you'll find thousands of items from trusted names like ICOM, Yaesu, Kenwood, and Elenco. There's world-famous antennas from OptiBeam, E-Antennas, and M-Squared, Rhone and American Towers, plus many more. And shop a wide selection of innovative DX Engineering brand products. They're designed and manufactured by our team of amateur radio enthusiasts for hams just like you. Plus, you get the fastest shipping in the ham universe, and shipping is free on most orders over $99. Experience ham radio heaven at dxengineering.com. That's dxengineering.com.
And we're back, Joel. And as promised, a question. This one's from JWB500D, and he asks, I'm building a cobweb-type antenna, and I expected that a 4-to-1 current balun should probably be used, but in researching, I find a 1-to-4 current balun, which I have not heard of until now. Can you describe the difference between the usual 4-to-1 balun and the 1-to-4 balun?
Well, yes. The usual 4-to-1 balun that we're used to seeing is designed to match a 200-ohm balanced load, perhaps from a T-match dipole or at the bottom of a balanced transmission line, to 50-ohm coax. So it's 200 ohms to 50 ohms, and that's a 4-to-1 impedance ratio. In the case of your cobweb, what happens is, as with any, it's a bent antenna, like a halo sort of, and with any shortened dipole antenna, which is what it is, it's shortened by bending it around, the impedance tends to get lower, and as a consequence, it will not be a good match to 50-ohm coax. In fact, a typical cobweb antenna that I looked at fairly recently had an impedance of about 12.5 ohms, which happens to be exactly a fourth of 50 ohms. So what you need to do, and the antenna side is balanced and the coax is unbalanced, so you need a transition device that matches the 12.5-ohm balanced load to a 50-ohm coax. So it's a 1-to-4 rather than a 4-to-1. Now, if it were an ideal transformer with nothing else going on and an ideal world, you'd think, well, I could just switch the connectors. I put the coax connector on the other side and turn it around.
I have wondered that.
And you may be able to get away with that. But the problem is, what's in the little balun box is not an ideal transformer. It's a transmission line transformer composed of balanced transmission line wound around a toroid, typically. And the spacing and the wire size of the transmission line that's there works best if it's actually kind of closely matched to what the load is. So there's a big difference between having a transmission line that's matched to 200 ohms and one that's matched to 12.5 ohms. So I think it's better, and I'm not sure they actually get it to match that way, but they bring it closer to that. So it's possible you could actually get on some frequencies where the individual transmission line characteristics don't matter much, which would be, you know, the very low frequencies compared to the length of the transmission line, that you might be able to get the 4-to-1 to work as a 1-to-4. But you're probably better off getting one that's designed to do that job.
Yeah.
So, you know, it'll just work better if it's designed to match the loads at both sides rather than just to transform the impedance a certain fraction.
You would think so, yes. This is our last podcast of 2018, Joel.
Wow.
Yeah, by the time folks hear this, we'll be 10 days away from New Year's Eve and deep into the holiday season. So this has been 2.5 years now, a little over 2.5 years.
Amazing. Actually. We still have things to talk about.
Yes, we do. And so I just wanted to wish everyone a happy new year, and we will see you right after.
Well, I second
right after
that.
New Year's.
Yes, indeed, and everybody hopefully gets your taxes all sorted out and everything straightened out and ready to go for next year. And wish everybody all the best. And that's very appropriate because even though it's 50 degrees when I left home this morning, we're actually talking about snow flurries the day after tomorrow. So
yeah,
we're working our way towards winter here.
Well, it must happen, Joel.
I guess sooner or later.
Thank you very much, as always.
My pleasure.
If you have a question for the doctor, email us at doctor@arrl.org. The Doctor Is In podcast is sponsored by DX Engineering at www.dxengineering.com. Background music provided by Purple Planet at www.purple-planet.com. This podcast is copyright ARRL. All rights are reserved. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.